You know, I guess I think I've always been a professional critic, you know, or some sort of professional appreciator or something.
Now, this is serious business here, man. Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
There are neighbors just to the north, but sometimes we take them for granted. This week, we're going to take a look at the music of Canada. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Cott. We explore today's music scene in Canada and share our favorite performances from Canadian musicians who've been guests on Sound Opinions. Plus, a review of the latest from Texas rocker Alejandro Escovedo. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
Suzanne takes you down to her place near the river. You can hear the boats go by. You can spend the night beside her. And you know that she's half crazy. But that's why you wanna be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all the way from China. And just when you mean to tell her that you have no love to give her, then she gets you on her wavelength and she lets the river.
This is Sound Opinions, and this week on the show we are talking about the music of Canada. That, of course, is Suzanne by one of Canada's most famous, most enduring musicians, Leonard Cohen. This giant of Canadian music has died at the age of 82. Born in Montreal, the son of Jewish immigrants, really made his impact when he moved to New York and joined that folk scene, nascent folk scene of the 60s that included Bob Dylan or Judy Collins, who covered his songs, including Suzanne. Considered by many for five decades to be a songwriter's songwriter. A stonecutter, he worked slowly, but every word and every nuance was perfect. He was not a great singer. My favorite quote that some critics have had is that nobody couldn't sing the songs of Leonard Cohen as well as Leonard Cohen couldn't sing them. But the voice was memorable. The words were immortal. Many of those melodies haunt us forever. Probably the best-known song, Alleluia, a true hymn, a perfect song covered by people as diverse as John Cale and Jeff Buckley. We are going to pay full tribute to Leonard Cohen and his five decades as a musical hero next week on Sound Opinions. We had already planned about talking about the music of Canada this week for the show. Looking to our neighbors to the north, Canada, of course, is a huge nation, very diverse geographically and musically. There is so much history there, from Neil Young and Joni Mitchell to Leonard Cohen or Alanis Morissette. We're not going to even scratch the surface, but we are going to look at some of the greats of Canadian music who've been guests on Sound Opinions, as well as checking out the pulse of today's music scene in Canada.
Yes, and to help guide us on our tour of the Canadian music scene, we're joined by Ben Rayner, the music critic for the Toronto Star since 1998. Ben, welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Your perceptions going into the job in Toronto as the music critic of what was going on in Canadian music right now, because, you know, I'll be upfront about this, I think it was a misperception in a lot of ways, but a lot of times you'd see these late night comedians, you know, these TV show comedians, you know, Canadian rock was sort of a punchline for decades, and wrongly so, I would think. But what was your perspective on it?
I mean, if you were looking at our kind of export product in the 70s and 80s, it was definitely bands really trying to sound American or English, you know, in the new wave era. Mm-hmm. It all affects platinum blondes would put on a British accent. But it was, you know, we had like Honeymoon Suite and Bryan Adams, Loverboy, a very corporate kind of rock that I think was thought would play well on the American airwaves. Everybody's working. So there was that side of it. And then you had your Shania Twains and your Celine Dion's and that sort of thing. And even today, Justin Bieber, we're very good at selling your stuff back to you.
Well, you know, I mean, the influence of American media is so pervasive coming over the border. You know, it's hard. It must have been hard for a long time to develop a truly Canadian identity.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of caught between the UK and a little bit to some extent France. So, yeah, we have to exist in the shadow of these two monolithic pop music cultures. So it took some time, but I think we're proving it in the last 25, 30 years. I think the extent to which Canada has kind of punched above its weight in terms of like getting music out there internationally is pretty impressive, and probably has something to do with the fact that our governments are pretty supportive of the arts. There's a lot of grants available for musicians. We have Canadian content regulations on radio.
Now, that's basically a quota system, right, Ben? Saying that radio stations in Canada are required to play a certain amount of Canadian content, or CanCon, throughout the day.
I don't know what the percentages are. They're a little bit less than they used to be, but it'd be certain hours, say, like during prime time, you'd have to have 40% CanCon, maybe like the overnight 25 or 30%. But it would just ensure that our artists had a bit of a foothold on radio against the tidal waves of American and British music coming in.
So 40% Canadian content, we want to hear from the people who are living here, making art here.
I mean, it was the source of jokes to some extent because, you know, a lot of bands probably made it big in Canada based purely on the fact that there wasn't so much going on and they needed something to fill those hours of programming. At one time, it was kind of a pejorative, so you'd be like, you know, the Honeymoon Suites theme to Lethal Weapon would come on the radio, say, and you'd go, oh my God, that's
CanCon.
That's CanCon. You take your life in your own hands. And even love can become a lethal weapon. But it's also giving people, like, at least access to homegrown music and enough good stuff that, and in aggregate mass, it's, we developed a scene here that we can be proud of.
One of the major differences, too, Ben, it seems like, between America, the United States, and Canada, in terms of the way it, you know, rolls out music, is that there's a great deal more government support of something like rock music in Canada, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a number of different systems. You know, Factor is an organization that you know, it'll help you with touring costs, recording costs, that sort of thing, and something like Factor is actually based on, like, you kind of have to achieve certain goals to qualify for more funding. Say if you've sold 5,000 records, the next time you come back, you'll get a little more money to record, and then if you sell 10,000 or what have you. Which, yeah, that's kind of like let bands build up, like, a touring profile and a recording profile. We have a number of, like, provincial and federal grants organizations. I think it's just by virtue of the fact that we had to kind of fortify ourselves against so many other incoming cultures. And bearing in mind that, like, it's not just American and British. Like, this country is a real, especially this city, Toronto, is just, you know, people from everywhere. It's given us the protection we need, I guess, to build this industry that's now kind of the envy of the world. The amount of stuff that we put out there based on our population, which is like a tenth the size of the U.S. population, is pretty impressive. I think there was a moment last year when 8 of the top 10 Billboard singles were Canadian.
Yeah.
That was just nuts. Grips on your ways, front way, back way. You know that I don't play. Street's not safe,
but I never run away. Even when I'm away. O-T, O-T. Canada and hip-hop, those words didn't go together in the 90s, you know, as recently as the 90s, and now it's become huge in that area. Is there a circuit for aspiring MCs to come through and develop their craft in Toronto?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, it's kind of off the radar. As much as we're all a little sick of Drake, because he's very good at grabbing headlines.
Yeah.
We're really deep underground hip-hop culture here that, I mean, Drake is kind of dragged into the world's field of vision, I guess, with Tory Lanez and The Weeknd to some extent.
Mm-hmm. So what about this producer, Catronata, out of Montreal?
Oh, Catronata, yeah. He's very deep, slick, warm kind of mix of house music and hip-hop, very soulful stuff. He's super young, 22 or 23. It's a little bit emblematic of what goes on up here because it's filtering a lot of different styles. That's a fun ride. That's a nice kind of smooth, that's a night record. Don't worry about the tag, go and throw it in the bag, cause I got it good. You're the best I ever had, baby, you know that you're bad and I got. He's the next thing, I think. I'd be surprised if he doesn't crack a little bit in the States.
Ben, take us on a tour of some of the major cities and provinces in Canada and tell us about their music scenes. Let's start with Montreal. What's unique about what's going on in Montreal's music scene today?
Montreal is actually a really cool example of what is right about kind of government support of the arts, actually, because it's got a really healthy avant-garde and experimental scene and a really healthy electronic music scene and a really cool festival, actually. They're called Mutech that runs every year, which is one of the major, I'm a techno guy, I'm an aging raver, one of the major stops on kind of like the thinking man's electronic music itinerary for the year. Good sense with the Arcade Fire comes out of Godspeed You Black Emperor. Quebec has the benefit of having the French culture. Their government is extra supportive because, right, they're doubly protecting themselves against Anglo culture coming in, as well as American English and French, like French, and a little Canadian history lessons for you. But there was a separatist movement in Quebec, and it drove a lot of the English businesses actually out. Montreal was at one time a bigger city than Toronto. So there's just lots of these great swaths of industrial. It's sort of like Berlin or Detroit. There was a lot of spaces you could move into. So it's cheap for artists to live there, and there's a lot of support for whatever you're doing.
What about Toronto, where you live, Ben? What are we going to get from the music scene there?
You're going to get a little of everything in Toronto. I believe we've eclipsed Chicago in population last year or the year before, so we're a big town now.
And it's a real melting pot, right?
There is a little bit of something for everybody here. I could, you know, if you like soca, I could find you a soca event, I'm sure, on the weekend. Or Kensington Market has a real history of like Jamaican artists emigrating in the 60s and 70s, so there's pretty heavy reggae scene here.
My children scream, my grandmother is dying. I came to Canada and found the doors of opportunities well guarded.
So you can sample anything here, and it's even just going, I mean, there's a whole like hardcore culture, like the punk culture out in the 905, out in the suburbs, that doesn't even penetrate the downtown, but which does really well international. There's bands like Electric on Fire.
Streets are in distress. The sun suffocates beyond darkened skies. The grass is growing rain. I'm dragging my feet. I'm taking what belongs to me. The lineup seems endless.
Plus, we have like this thriving indie rock scene that just every couple of months there's another band that blows up out of here somewhere. And sometimes I haven't even heard of them. I'm reading about them in Pitchfork or in like The Guardian. I think we're the third largest live music market in the world now. There's just so much stuff going on.
Wow.
It's pretty happening, actually. It's exhausting being a music writer in this town.
All right, well, what about the places that we ignorant Americans, you know, would never think of, like Winnipeg, or I'm particularly fascinated with Newfoundland? Is that, I don't even know how to say
Newfoundland.
It.
That was my entry point to Canada when I moved from the UK, actually.
Really? I mean, that literally seems like the weirdest, most desolate place on Earth that you could be that's not the Antarctic.
It's quite a special place. I'm lucky to spend a lot of time there. And St. John's, the capital, is small, but by virtue of its isolation, because it's on an island in the North Atlantic, actually pretty city-like and happening. There's a lot going on there, and because it's expensive to leave the island, it's kind of got its own self-sustaining circuit, right? Mm. So, and everybody plays an instrument. It's kind of cool, actually. It's the land of the kitchen party.
That's how they show their respect for Pat Murphy. That's how they show their honor and their pride. They said it was a sin and a shame that we winked at one another. And every drink in the place was full the night Pat Murphy died.
You know what's another fun city for music, it's always kind of happening, is Halifax, Nova Scotia. Dating back to bands like Sloan and the Super Friends and Eric's Trip. We're actually from Moncton, New Brunswick, near where I grew up, but we're kind of lumped in with that scene in the grunge era. That's never gone away. There's a really fun little noise pop scene in Halifax. Bands like Dog Day and Kestrels making really cool, slightly Anglo-centric guitar rock.
We're we're talking to one of our favorite fellow rock critics, Ben Rayner of the Toronto Star, fine paper, up north, as they say. So Ben, I think the place to wrap up is give us a couple of artists from Canada who you like. I mean, we're trusting you as a critic.
Up-and-comers.
Who haven't broken here yet.
I was going to give you a couple of really cool ones that couldn't have come out of anywhere other than us. I will, Tanya DeGock is an Inuk throat singer, so the Inuit are Arctic dwelling native people, and she's played with Björk and people like she is. What she does is this weird crossbeat of like free jazz, metal, rock. She does a Pixies cover,
wow,
of Paraboo, but it's all wordless vocals. It's sort of this guttural, feral, almost like demonic grunting and shrieking. I can't really describe it. Tanya DeGock. Hair-raising, but completely unique. And to see her live, it's like seeing someone possessed by spirits.
Wow.
Demonic, possession, retribution, you got me.
I'm in.
Another very Canadian kind of thing, and from my home province of New Brunswick. New Brunswick is a bilingual province, so half of it is French, half of it is English. The southwestern side where I grew up is English, but the rest of it, basically, above Moncton, is Acadian French, so it has ties to Louisiana and the Cajun population there. Lisa LeBlanc is a Cajun, she's kind of a folk rocker from Roselleville, New Brunswick. She's bilingual. Our first album is in French. Her new one is in English. And she's got a voice, actually, that reminds me a bit of Nico Case. But it's this kind of foot-stomping, bluesy version of Acadian folk music. And it rocks pretty hard. And she's got a hell of a voice. Pigeon, please wait till I've had my coffee. Pigeon, please wait till I've had my coffee. Before you break. A neat example of a culture very specific to one province. She speaks in like Chiac, which is half French, half English, so you'll switch complètement en français halfway through the sentence and come back. And like, it's just like, that's a couple of very, very Canadian things for you.
We've been talking to Ben Rayner, the music critic for the Toronto Star since 1998, about Canadian music. Ben, thanks for playing tour guide with us today.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
When we come back, we'll highlight some of our favorite performances and interviews from Canadian artists who've been guests on Sound Opinions. And later, we'll head toward the Texas border and review the new album from Alejandro Escovedo. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
This is Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and we're exploring the music of Canada. Over the years, we've had a number of Canadian artists come through the Sound Opinions studios, and we're going to revisit some of our favorites.
Greg, we've got to start with Arcade Fire from Montreal, probably the most successful band in our lifetimes that we've covered as music critics, to emerge from the real indie rock underground up to an arena-level act with this very unique orchestral pop sound. Truly inspiring stuff. We first had Arcade Fire on the show in 2007, right after the release of their second album, Neon Bible. Multi-instrumentalists Regine Chassaigne and Will Butler chatted with us about the band's writing process, and I asked Regine what the typical starting point was for an Arcade Fire song.
Oh, it can be anything, really. It could be a beat, could be a lyric, could be something you see on TV, could be a chord progression.
It's interesting that you say a beat, because to me, one of the keys of the Arcade Fire is the rhythms. And you see that when it becomes celebratory on stage with everybody almost playing a percussion instrument.
Well, I just love thinking about beats. Like, for me, it's like so important. And what often happens is that we'll be playing Wynn and I, and I'll just end up playing drums, because I know how to play piano pretty good, but I've played it my whole life, and I'm almost like, oh, piano, whatever. So, like, I always like to be challenged, so I'll just play drums, but I'm always trying to find the perfect beat that will, if we come up with lyrics, the beat that will, where the hits will fall in between the words and find, like, the right places for fills, and mm-hmm. I like doing that.
Well, like Wake Up off the last album, the first half is the We Will Rock You beat. And the second half is the, you know, is the lust for life / can't hurry love beat. We want to make a song that has really basic chords, that has really, really almost stupid classic rock and roll beat, but has something to it. Like, we want to make something out of these parts that could conceivably be empty by this point in rock and roll history.
But it's not really. But it's I mean, Lust for Life is kind of a take on the Bo Diddley beat,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's got this syncopated feel that when you guys get going in that groove, it really just brings 30,000 people with you.
I think in a recording environment, we want to make everything perfect. But then in a live environment, if there's space to fill and you can fill it in an exciting way, then fill it.
Now here's Arcade Fire from their second appearance on Sound Opinions in 2011, performing an acoustic version of Sprawl 2.
Thank you.
That's Arcade Fire with a special acoustic version of Sprawl 2 when they were on Sound Opinions in 2011. That covers Montreal for us, Greg. Let's move on to Toronto and talk a little bit about Feist, singer-songwriter. We spoke with her in 2006, a year before she had this huge smash hit with 1, 2, 3, 4 when it appeared in a iPod Nano commercial.
1, 2, 3, 4, tell me that you love me more. Sleepless, long nights, that's what my youth was for.
She grew up in Calgary, and she's been all over the Toronto scene, you know, playing with that super group, Broken Social Scene, collaborating with Peaches, a fascinating career. So I started by asking her how she'd describe the direction her solo career took once she decided to set out on her own.
I think it's always harder to put any kind of title on something that's coming from the inside. You know, I don't really know where it, once it comes out, where does it land, you know, and depending on the country and the ears listening and the person and the context they're going to be comparing to of all the records they've had in their life, every person has some other, you know, I've actually been able to completely detach myself with a good ironic distance to laugh at all the descriptions I've heard,
yeah.
Because people compare it to stuff I've never heard and then stuff I have, and I, like, you know, every instance is really funny for me, because everybody, we're all just sponges and we take in the things that we listen to and read. And, you know, I always say that my musical influences are equally interactions I have with people on the bus, if they're kind to me or really horrible to me. You know, that stuff all finds its way, it comes out again in some... But so I'm sidewinding your
well, no, it's, you know,
dodging the question, but doing it charmingly.
It started out exactly as you're sitting here, really, with a guitar and your voice and a 4-track tape recorder, basically. I mean,
yeah, exactly. All that Peaches stuff and the Broken Social Scene stuff and a lot of other collaborations I did in Toronto, all that was happening simultaneously. And on any given weekend, someone could happen upon the little coffee house kind of place called Say What in Toronto, and I'd be playing a solo set with my 4-track with some backing tracks that I'd recorded at home that afternoon, and solo show. And then on Friday with By Divine Right, this rock band that I was in for a few years, where I was just a rhythm guitarist and I didn't sing, and I got to just jump on top of the monitors and play rock guitar. And they could walk into that on the Friday, and then Saturday it could be at an art gallery with Peaches and those early days. And that could happen any given weekend.
Well,
so.
Before we, people who haven't heard you, why don't you play us a song and they'll...
Okay. First song on the record, and it's called Gatekeeper. Well, it's time to begin as the summer sets in. It's the scene set for new lovers. You play a part, painting it a new start, but each gate will open another. June, July, and August end. It's probably hard to plan ahead. June, July, and August end. Well, it's better to bask in each other. Oh, gatekeeper, seasons wait for you to nod. Gatekeeper, you held your breath, made the summer go on and on. Well, they try to stay in from the cold and the wind, making love and making a dinner, only to find that the love that they grew in the summer, well, it froze. Oh, February, April, sand. Don't be fooled by that summer again. February, April, sand. Will the half of the year where we'll never be friends? Gatekeeper, seasons wait for you not. Gatekeeper, you held your breath, made the wind go on and on and on and on. Gatekeeper, gatekeeper.
That was Gatekeeper by Feist, live on one of the first episodes ever of Sound Opinions in 2006. In 2007, the very next year, we had another fine Canadian band in the studio, the New Pornographers, a supergroup of sorts out of Vancouver. A bunch of indie music veterans in that group, led by A.C. Carl Newman. The band also included at various points Nico Case, Dan Behar, Catherine Calder. They all took turns singing vocals in that band. With so many voices in the band, I had to ask Carl Newman how they decide who sings each New Pornographers song.
Sometimes it's a little bit like the way the Cars did it, how Rick Ocasek and Benjamin Orr would both sing lead and just figure out what works best. Mm-hmm. Like there's stuff that both, you know, Catherine and Nico sang and just figured out what worked the best, essentially.
You'll have a bunch of people try a song sometimes and figure out who does
or
it best.
That's kind of how the gang vocals end up on songs. It's not all laid out. You just have everybody sing. Like, since you're here, why don't you sing on this? Why don't you sing on this? Why don't you sing on this? And then pretty soon you have, like, the end of Bleeding Heart show, which has, like, 10 people singing
everybody
on it.
Everybody, yeah.
Not because it was, like, any real intention to have it sound like that. It was just that when you add it all together, it sounds great.
There are four distinct parts in that song, right? It's almost like a suite.
Yeah,
kind of. And it's 4 minutes, four parts. I mean, it's this amazingly... You wrote a prog rock song, basically, but nobody knows that. You know, it's this very complicated kind of song, it sounds very seamless.
I think I've always... you know that song Rosecrans Boulevard by Jimmy Webb? I've always wanted to write a song like that. I just love the way it was only 3 minutes long and just ever, ever expanding.
Rosecrans calling me, you know I never loved her anyway, I just used her over and over.
There were times and constantly changing, but yet not in an annoying prog way. Mm-hmm. Like it's this great, great song. So I think I've always been chasing that. Mm-hmm. Which it's a dangerous thing to be chasing.
Well, it's a hard thing to do that, those kind of like little parts within a song and make it appear seamless. Like on the Yes albums, they always seem to announce, you know, this is going to be really difficult. We're playing this 17/8 and it's going to be this, you know, and you'll hear it and it's really apparent.
I think as long as you put three chords at the end and sing Hey La, Hey La, people will just forgive whatever happened in the first 3 minutes.
Now here's the New Pornographers performing Adventures in Solitude live on Sound Opinions in 2007. From the depths.
That's The New Pornographers, led by Carl Newman, performing Adventures in Solitude on Sound Opinions back in 2007. And now, Greg, there is no way we can talk about music from Canada without talking about one of our favorite bands ever, Rush. All right, how great a day was it when we got to talk to Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson celebrating the 40th anniversary of Rush. You know, the band says a key to its longevity is that over all those decades, the musicians have never had a big fight. So I asked Alex and Geddy if that was true.
I don't recall any time like that. There have been times where we've been feeling pressure for one reason or another, you know, and often external to what the band is. And really, from my experience, you know, my brothers come and help me. It's been a remarkable relationship that we've had. Working, laughing, living, lots of ups and downs, but we've always maintained a very strong bond and friendship throughout. And I think it really comes down to having respect for each other. And yelling and screaming is never a really good way to get anything done.
Yeah, that's our Canadian-ness.
Sorry.
That is Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee of perhaps the quintessential Canadian band, the power trio Rush. Now we want to hear from you. Who are your favorite Canadian artists? Give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. When we get back, we're going to review the new album from Texas singer-songwriter Alejandro Escobedo, and Jim's going to share a Canadian track he can't live without. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
We are secrets to each other. Each one's life a novel no one else has read. Even joined in bonds of love, we're linked to one another by such slender threads. We are planets to
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis. That's Alejandro Escobedo with a new album called Burn Something Beautiful and a track called Horizontal. Alejandro Escobedo, living in Texas right now, but has been all over the map in the music scene since the 70s. He was in one of the original punk bands out of San Francisco, the Nuns. They opened the Sex Pistols' final show in their first incarnation in the 70s, went on to Rank and File, another notable cow punk band, as they were called back in the early 80s, moved from there to the True Believers, a guitar army out of Texas that is revered by guitar aficionados, and then began a long and fruitful solo career in the early 90s, in which he has straddled the roots rock scene, celebrated by No Depression magazine and the alt-country movement, as well as the punk and glam rock scenes. He's an icon to people who know those genres of music. Now we have his latest album. It's a product of a number of things, a number of personal crises that he's gone through. He's overcome hepatitis C. He survived a near-fatal hurricane on his honeymoon in Mexico. And now he's reemerged with this new album. Peter Buck and Scott McCoy are co-producers on this record. Buck, of course, with R.E.M. McCoy, a longtime sideman with R.E.M. It's called Burn Something Beautiful. Here's a track from it called Johnny Volume on Sound Opinions.
I'm feeling so much better. It's time to make amends. You see me on the corner. It feels straightforward.
That is Johnny Volume by Alejandro Escovedo from the new album Burn Something Beautiful. And Greg, there's a lot of history in there. Obviously, he's doing the Velvet Underground thing, the Lou Reed vocal. You know, I think because I've been teaching reviewing the arts to 22-year-olds, I am sensitive about artists being given a pass just because they have a long and storied legacy. Even that capsule description of Alejandro's history that you gave, you know, that's only scratched the surface, right? But is the guy any good today? And if you can't tell a young listener, hey, where do you start with this incredible discography of 40 albums, if you count them all up, and you can't say, honestly, buy the new one, start there and work your way backwards, then this artist shouldn't be given a pass. And I can say that about Burn Something Beautiful. Alejandro is singing partly about the concerns of a 65-year-old man. I've seen better days. I've got nothing left to say, but that's all right, he sings at one point. You know, at another point, I don't want to play guitar anymore. He's wondering if there's even any purpose to him continuing to make music. And the answer comes in the fury and the power and the energy of those feedback-driven riffs, you know, having a ball in the garage, essentially. And I don't know. You know, I don't think Alejandro ever has sounded more inspired, and he does have things to say, especially being of Mexican-American descent and looking across the border with our neighbor to the south. I think this is a vital and vibrant and essential album, and absolute buy it.
Yeah, I think that Buck and McCoy bring out a side of his guitar playing that hasn't been heard before on record. There's never been a more feedback-drenched record in Alejandro's career, and that's saying something because he's a, you know, a guitar god for a
that
lot of people.
That man loves his Velvet Underground.
Absolutely. 65 years old, he rocked as hard as anybody that I saw at the Pitchfork Music Festival. If you closed your eyes, you would think this is some 19-year-old kid trying to prove
himself. With something to prove,
But at the same time, he's got a story to tell, and you mentioned the I Don't Want to Play Guitar Anymore track, which was a moment for him, a low moment. He was recovering from these maladies, going through some really deep trauma. And music was his salvation at the end of it. And you can hear that sense of catharsis in this record. There's the introspective side, there's a skrunky, free jazz side, and there's that volume of the guitars. A great record from Alejandro Escovedo. It's a buy it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible, we like to take a trip to that desert island, play a track we cannot live without. Jim, you got the quarter ready? What are you going to play for us?
Greg, from the southern border, I'm going back up north. I'm going to Canada. One more track from Canada. I've long been fascinated by the concept of Newfoundland. You know, this is sort of the edge of the world, you know, the very tip of Canada, closer to England, really, than the United States. There was a band in the early 90s formed in St. John's called Chevy, pronounced like the car, but spelled S-H-E-A-V-Y, kind of like, is heavy, right? Mm-hmm. Chevy. Formed in Newfoundland, in the middle of nowhere, a dark and cold and barren place, as they described it to me. I interviewed the band for articles in Guitar World and Modern Drummer. I love this group. That early 90s moment of stoner rock, or doom, some people called it, was a reimagining of the great sounds of early metal, early Deep Purple, in particular early Sabbath, inspired in large part by Caius, the desert rock band led by Josh Homme. You know, everybody wanted to be Caius all of a sudden, but these guys up in northern Canada wanted to be Caius crossed with Black Sabbath, and since they were from the middle of nowhere, they really put their own unique spin on things. A little psychedelia, a little bit of strange Canadian reinterpretation of southern rock, of all things, you know what I mean? Like a little Lynyrd Skynyrd, but as filtered through Canada. I think there were two great albums that came sort of in the middle of their career, The Electric Sleep in 1997 and Celestial Hi-Fi in 1999. Those are the two records. I've heard metal fans describe them as the best Black Sabbath albums in 25 years, right? Meaning Sabbath hasn't made a good record for a long time, right? I think the band lost the plot a little bit when its leader, spiritual leader and drummer, an extraordinary musician named Ren Squires, left. But those are the two to start with if you want great stoner rock and one more record to pay a little bit of a tribute to Canada with. This is the lead-off track of Celestial Hi-Fi. It's called Hyper Faster by Chevy on Sound Opinion. That is Chevy from Newfoundland with Hyper Faster, my Desert Island Jukebox pick for the week. Next week on Sound Opinions, we are going to talk, in honor of Thanksgiving, about musical turkeys, bands we can't defend, but who gave us one song that we will pardon in the spirit of the Thanksgiving turkey pardon. We also will pay full tribute to singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, dead at the age of 82. Sound Opinions has been produced by Brendan Banaszak, Evan Chung, and Alex Claiborne. Yeah. Oh, yeah. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. Pick up the phone, baby. I know you're home, baby. It's lit. I'm in the zone, baby. Straight up. I just put up a phone, baby. Yeah. New messages.
Hey, this is Bill from Bloomingdale, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. And I just listened to the show you guys did with What's Going On as the central theme. And it literally brought me to tears. That is great work. From a journalism point of view, that is Pulitzer Prize stuff. I got friends who just have to hear the show you guys just did. Congratulations, guys. I've listened for a long time. You touch things in me that nobody on the radio has touched in a long time. Thank you so much, and keep it going. Peace. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby.
This is Lillian. I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois. I wanted to commend you on your Marvin Gaye analysis. The way you isolated the various brilliant elements of his music really touched my heart. Back in 1973, I used What's Going On for my husband's funeral. The funeral director was a little bit surprised, but he went with it, and everybody was really touched with Marvin Gaye. But I do thank you so much for the attention you gave to the work of the brilliant Marvin Gaye. Thanks again. Your show is wonderful. Bye.
Hello, my name is Michael Evans from Chicago. Just heard your Marvin Gaye breakdown on What's Going On. It's one of my favorite albums I have. But I also wanted to take you to task for Stevie, Marvin's label mate, came out with an album, Where I'm Coming From.
Do yourself a favor. Educate your mind. Get yourself together.
Marvin Gaye's What's Going On is Tamla 310. Stevie Wonder's Where I'm Coming From is Tamla 308, which he produced on his own, and it has the lyrics on the back of the album also, and gets into some of the same social issues. So Stevie was already going there. I think, you know, Marvin might have given him the impetus to get his own publishing and get that higher royalty rate for Motown, but he was already heading in that direction. I think both albums are companion pieces. So thanks a lot, guys. Bye now.
My name is Will Grosh, long time listener. You guys do fantastic work. You probably heard it a lot, which is true, but I'm giving you a call because I just listened to your piece on John Prine, Does a Guy with Jukebox. And all I can say is, wow, particularly you nailed it with Angel from Montgomery. I've got tears in my eyes. Just, it's amazing.
Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
You blew me away. Take care.
When I was a young girl.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.